if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello and welcome to a very special half episode of the Big Red Barrel UK podcast. I am Coleman. Hi. And with me is Tim.
Hello.
And not content with the Choose Your Own Adventure madness of episode 300, plus the 12 hours of editing that went into that episode, we thought, why not? Let's give ourselves some more work and do a half episode. And the reason for that, if you may remember last year, we did talk about going to the brand new Namco Bandai offices in London. And we've been back to play some of the games.
They had us back, fools.
The fools. They led us back. Did they not see the negative feedback on our Ace Combat video? We can't play video games.
We can't fly.
I've got a feeling I'm going to have one of those, but we'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, we went to the post-E3 lineup, I believe.
Yes.
So that includes Code Vein, Divinity Original Sin 2.
Definitive Edition.
Soul Calibur 6, My Hero 1's Justice, and Jump Force. So we're going to dive right into these because we did get to play all of these lovely, cool games. It's hard doing what we do, Tim. It's hard.
Well, yeah, they were all things that neither of us had played before, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to see a load of new games and have a good play with each of them and just see what we thought. So what are we going to jump into first, Mr. Coleman?
Well, as you said, Jump. Let's talk about Jump Force.
Ooh.
Because we played this separately because there was only a one-player version of the demo.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, we spoke about this briefly at the Big E3 show. This is a mishmash of different anime titles.
Basically, I think J-Star's referred to Jump. And Jump is a manga in Japan that's a collection of different manga comics. And these are the characters from those mangas.
Rather than taking the anime style that we usually see where they use the cel-shaded animation style to make it look like a 3D anime, they're using more of a realistic graphical tone. All the characters have like dirty clothes and they're meant to look like they have actual skin textures and things. Makes them look a little bit plasticine-y, to be honest.
They still do look cartoony, though.
They do. There's cartoon. Yeah, it's cartoony enough. And there's characters from, well, the ones we've seen so far. I believe there's another series that's been confirmed that's going to be in this, but I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But we saw characters from One Piece, Naruto, and Dragon Ball. Well, Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball Super, not sure.
Let's go with Z.
So you got to pick three characters on each side, tag battle style, and rather than what they've done with Dragon Ball FighterZ, where it's a 2D, 3D, traditionally 2D style, a bit madcap, bombastic powers like the Marvel Capcom series. Mm. Instead of that, it's more like Budokai Tensai? I think that's the name of it. Series of Dragon Ball games where it's like an open plane.
Yeah, it's more of a 3D action beat 'em up type thing.
Third person style.
Yeah. I got a very short taste of this. Basically, we were waiting for Soul Calibur, and I slinked off to play this while we were waiting, and then you were setting up just to go behind the scenes. But even then, it was over quite quickly. It was 3-on-3 battles, but as soon as you defeat one person, it seemed to end the match.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just the setting for the demo or that's the general setup.
It's tag team, but not elimination.
Yeah, which seemed odd in comparison to other games that I've played recently where that isn't the case.
Yeah, it kind of makes for an interesting idea of resource. You're managing your energy bars between characters to figure out who's the lowest and who you can switch back to get a little bit of a health boost back. I played a lot more of this than you. I played every combination of characters I could.
Right, because there was only 6 characters available, I think, in the demo.
Yes.
So there was enough to fill 2 sides of 3, basically.
It was kind of packed out playing this game to begin with, and then England started playing, and then everyone disappeared. So
well, to be fair, food was served at the same time.
Oh, yeah, that was that as well. I played a lot of Jump Force, and I tried every character and worked out all the finishing animations and stuff. It was pretty smooth and cool. In the sense of its animations, the actual gameplay itself's got a little bit of jank to it. It's in alpha at the moment, like early alpha at the moment. I thought it was interesting, but at the same time, with the amount of polish that's gone into Dragon Ball FighterZ, and I originally they used to make this style of game, Tim, and then they stopped and tried something called Burst Limit, Dragon Ball Burst Limit. And I picked that up and I found it just too much of like a 2D fighting game that was super hard and really hard AI. And I just found it kind of unforgiving and preferred the previous games. And that's what took me out of the series. And they kind of went back to that style again. And then when they showed off Dragon Ball FighterZ, I liked the look of it, but at the same time was kind of turned off by the style of game until I played it myself. And then went, oh, no, this is great. It's very approachable. It's anyone of any kind of experience can jump straight into this and find some sort of enjoyment out of it. Whereas going back to this slightly open stage, it brings it back to that level that where you've got to be at a certain skill set and know what you're doing to get into it. So there's going to be
a bit more of a barrier of entry.
Yeah, a slight learning curve, but it's one that's there.
I know, it's the wrong sort of thing, and I also think that it doesn't stand up to a comparison well because you've seen those characters used elsewhere recently as well. I think that's part of the problem. But yeah, for me, wasn't always the interesting game we saw at the day, you put it that way.
It was the one that I was more interested to go play and check out and get my hands on myself, especially so soon after knowing it exists, basically. Whereas with Soul Calibur 6, we've been hearing about this for about a year now, just over a year, so... You know, Jump Force, they just announced it at E3. It was the first thing I'd seen of it, and then got it in my hands. It was a pretty cool thing. Okay, so what do you want to do next? One fighter to another, or should we just jump?
Yeah, let's stick with the fighters for now. Let's get those.
Soul Calibur 6. We probably played the most out of this game, but...
Well, we got like 40 minutes of capture, and I think we played a little bit other than that as well, no?
But I really enjoyed this. We had a huge roster of characters. I think there was only like 8 missing out of what's going to be the total, and I'm hoping those are unlockable characters, not DLC characters that were blanked out. You can see them on the selection screen in our video.
I would think that they're just either not even unlockable, but just not announced or generally. Like, they have already announced that Talim is coming back, who was, I think, introduced in 4, I think, if I remember correctly. But yeah, she's quite good, so I'm glad that she's back, basically. They are adding more fighters, and I'm sure there'll just be more fighters out before the game. I don't even know it'll be a case of unlocking them in-game, which is one of the things I miss from games, so I wish they kind of did. But yeah, like, what did you think? Because it's a series that I've generally loved over the years. I wasn't that enamored with the previous game. I thought it was okay. I liked it, but I didn't absolutely love it, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, where did I stop? I think I stopped at 3 or 4. I can't remember which one I stopped at, but I remember playing it on the 360. I think the reason I went off this game, and other fighters as well, was the single-player content, because...
Single-player content for Soul Calibur is always good, though.
I prefer more like the Tekken thing, where you're fighting for a cutscene and stuff, and the storyboarding kind of got annoying, and the RPG element, and then making these weird mishmash characters for you to fight, like bots, essentially, for you to fight against them. It got kind of boring. And that's the mechanic they now use in mobile fighting versions of AAA games. Well,
they were one of the first ones, I think, that has now been aped by other games like Mortal Kombat and stuff that had the... And Mortal Kombat always had other things. But for me, Soul Calibur was the first game that really introduced going through like a towers of different difficulties. Well, not necessarily different difficulties, but different environmental hazards and different things going on, like your health is constantly ticking down, or, you know, some other handicap or something that makes each individual round more difficult. They may not have been the first, but they were definitely one of the first big fighting games that I saw with that kind of level of depth to it as well, basically.
Well, so go back onto my point. The reason, because I used to play fighting games with friends, and then as I've moved away, or friends have stopped playing games altogether, and over the years, it's kind of, I've aged out of fighting games and then I've picked them up, attempts of reliving past glories, and then played it just for the single player content, and there's not really enough to keep me there, and I suck at online.
For me, that's one of the problems with everything moving to online, a bit away from like playing with your mates around one TV type of thing. This is a game that thrived in that environment, and I don't think works as well with just the online there, and it's not as easy to like get a group of mates together. I know you can do it through, you know, partying up and doing that in some ways in some games.
But I'll put it this way. If I was playing Tekken 2 and someone started cheesing the same devil lasers over and over again, I can hit him with a controller and call him a dick. You can't do that to the guy who's playing in Korea at 4 a.m. by the powers of the internet. But I think since we've been playing fighting games together, that's what's been getting me back into fighting games. Because we're back to that local content again. And playing Soul Calibur 6, if I was playing that on my own, I would have gone and played it for video pretty much. That was it. Just play cycle through characters. But instead, it was us cycling through characters, trying to figure out which one's our favorite, but how we're going to outmatch the other one, and bringing that back into it. So yeah, it's probably made a day one purchase for me after playing this. And Geralt's such a good character.
Yeah, he works really well.
Geralt from the Witcher series. specifically very Witcher 3 looking Geralt version in this one. He's got all his cool little spells and stuff. He does his fire and his mind control and his what is essentially a force push.
He didn't seem out of character, which is, no. I think, the best compliment I can pay.
Putting him up against Mitsurugi just didn't seem out of place at all. It worked really well. In our preview video that we put up, where it's just pure gameplay, no talking over it or anything, but we played a Geralt v Geralt match. I think we both played as Geralt and lost as Geralt and went, right, Geralt has to win a match. He's the new character. So we did Geralt v Geralt. That way someone's going to win. And it worked out really well. I thought it was very entertaining.
It was good. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time with the game generally. I think people correctly identified that I get a bit spammy. That's kind of how I approach fighting games.
You fight like an esports fighter.
Oh, thanks, I think.
Yeah, they do a lot of the same moves over and over again.
The one compliment I did get from the internet was people like my tacky fighting, and she's always been one of my favourite characters.
You did make her look very impressive, so, even though you used about four moves over and over again.
Well, you know, that's what I do. I really enjoyed my time with it, and it was one of those ones where, yeah, I can't wait to play more of it, basically.
Favourite character in the roster?
Historically, between Tacky and Kalik, I'd say. But I have a lot of fun with Maxie. There's a lot. That's one of the reasons I really like this game, because there's a lot of characters I have a lot of fun with. Whereas in other fighting games, I generally resort to the same type of characters or a couple of characters. This one, I like going through the roster quite a lot, kind of thing.
I'm feeling Geralt, but you know, he can't beat Mitsurugi. He's my favorite still. And he worked really well in this. He's got some, he has the best ring out moves.
Yeah. Should say there's an addition that is new for this version of the game called Reversal Edge. And I quite like that as an addition. I think you were a bit less enamored with it than I was, Common, but basically that's the bit where you'll kind of go for a clash, and then it's almost like the mechanic from Injustice, where you choose, it's a rock, paper, scissors type decision between your three attacks, and one beats the other. But it led to some big clashes and coming together, and that with the special moves and stuff as well. I think it adds a fun element that kind of brings it fully up to date and makes it's kind of derivative of other things, but it still feels like its own thing. It feels in keeping. I thought that those clashes felt in keeping with the kind of swords type combat as well.
Like you say, it's similar to Injustice and Injustice 2 system of their clash system was, if you've built up enough energy, you can use a light attack, a medium attack, a heavy attack, a super attack sort of thing, and you wage who's going to pick the lower attack. Mm. And if you've got the stronger attack, you win.
This one
is low move, high move, middle move. You know, who gets the high ground?
Yeah, and it's literally just rock, paper, scissors with this one.
Don't do it, Anakin. I have the high ground.
Which is a bit simpler, but I kind of like that. And for me, that kind of gives me some shades of Dead or Alive, which I kind of like as well. So
it has super moves, though.
Yeah, and as I said, I like them. I think it's a good update and adds another level of interest.
They're great in Injustice because they suit the characters. They're superheroes and supervillains. They have powers. That's really cool. When you put them in games that I know a certain way and it changes, it does change a lot about the game.
Yeah.
Because the super moves, they are big, powerful attacks. And I know you can use them to your advantage. If you're losing, all of a sudden, bang, you just knock someone's health bar down by whatever the handicap you've set, but usually about halfway. That gets you back in the game. That's fine, but at the same time, it feels out of place because I've played Soul Edge, I've played Soul Calibur and the sequels, I've played Tekken, I've played Street Fighter. Putting super moves in kind of it cheapens the feel to me. But I think it takes away
from the combat. But I can understand that point of view, but I like them and think that generally they just add to the spectacle of the game, generally. I also think it still feels distinctly like a Soul Calibur game. And a lot of that's down to the environments and the arenas, because you've still got the whole ability to do ring outs. And the ability to run after people afterwards as well.
That's my favourite thing to do still.
Which is always good for comedy. So
I know. I'd like it to be optional, you know? I'd like there to be a mode where supers are turned off.
Okay.
And I know in some of the games you can do that in online. You can go, right, no one can use supers. I wish that was a local mode as well.
I think they're a good addition. But generally, overall, really enjoyed my time with the game and definitely looking forward to the release of that one.
Now, I've got to pick your brain on this one. This was my opportunity to be the you of last time, where you played Ace Combat, we uploaded a video, and it is flooded with people going, rubbish this game, you play on easy mode. Oh, if I was there, I could play it better. Well, you weren't. We played a Souls-like called Code Vein. I hadn't heard of this until we were on our way to play it, and I looked at a video.
Right.
Oh, that looks really cool. it has got this groundswell of people really excited for this game, because I think it's because of the taking a Souls-like and throwing in all this anime style story view, the way the lore is written and stuff. It's created these two worlds on the internet and put them together. So that's why it's got this big following at the moment, waiting for this game to come out in bigger anticipation. And to the point where we uploaded the video, and it wasn't people going, you're rubbish at this game, because it was me playing, and I was rubbish at this game. I did like three playthroughs, and I recorded the first one. I should have recorded the third one where I knew what I was doing, in hindsight. But there's people going, oh, what are they saying? What vein are you, or something? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think...
Hunter? Like, and then someone was like, no, he's 4/706. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand how the fandom's so big for a game that hasn't come out yet.
Now, my turn to bring the listeners in to a couple of secrets, behind the scenes secrets, one that we've kept for a short while, only until this episode, and one that we've kept for a bit longer, because Coleman may be rubbish at this game, but I was more rubbish at this game, laughably so, you might say.
I wasn't rubbish. I was rubbish in that playthrough. I am distinctly average at this game.
I was distinctly below average on my first playthrough, which involved me, I believe, at one point rolling off a cliff to get away from someone accidentally, and then falling into another fight, which then got me knocked off another cliff, which killed me.
But it just looked hilarious.
Right, and just to get in,
I wish
the
I captured that.
Just to get in the other secret, if you want to see how bad I was at Ace Combat 7, you should have seen Colm.
That's a fair point. A lot of people were saying that your gameplay last year, it took too long because you were playing the wrong type of way. You were not using your thrusters sparingly to turn and stuff. You were just trigger down on the throttle.
It's almost as if I haven't played the game a lot or anything.
My gameplay time doubled yours. I don't think I got to the end scene because my gameplay timed out. That's how bad I was. So it was kind of nice reversing that this year, but I was the one who recorded, so we'll see how that goes down.
I'm not the biggest Souls player, but for me, this felt like not quite as polished as anything from FromSoftware. I don't know, we were seeing possibly early code and stuff like that, but we've seen a few other spin-offs. Was it The Surge that was another kind of Souls, and there's been another couple of things. I'm not necessarily knocking it, and I'm not necessarily the best person to criticize it for, but for me, it felt like falling off a cliff was very easy in that game, basically. Yeah. There was a lot of cheap deaths, which I don't think would be... They might make a particular area very tricky for it, but I don't know if it was just the area we were playing in. It seems that anywhere you were always by a cliffside and always could fall off to your death just, you know, by going off the path a little bit. Yeah, but
and kind of aping on what you say, like our experience this, I believe you played Demon's Souls for a bit. Was that the one, or were you playing Dark Souls 1 originally?
I played the original Demon's Souls.
Demon's Souls, okay. So you played Demon's Souls, and I played
one of the
Bloodborne.
Dark Souls ones, Dark Souls 1 or 2, I can't
yeah,
remember.
Yeah, I tried the intro to Dark Souls 2 and went, not for me, and then I played Bloodborne and really got into it. So we're not the most experienced at the genre, or the, you know, all the series for fact. But I've dabbled here and there in other games, especially in preview, because we've been to events and stuff where we played a Souls-like. Usually I queue up for something and then I sit down and go, oh damn it, it's a Souls-like, you got me again. And the kind of level we're showing these games at are very janky, very very early, some interesting twists on the format we've seen in previous titles and stuff, but this one it didn't have that jank. It wasn't too, as you say, it wasn't too the polish of the Souls series, but at the same time I was impressed with what it had there. And because of the style of story, I don't think it's a day one for me, but I think somewhere down the line, I'll probably pick this up or try it maybe, like a rental or something along the way. But again, it's not a game made for me, but it's got enough there for me to be curious about.
For me, it's something I'll pass on, but I can see why Souls fans and other people would be excited by it and interested in it, basically.
I mean, they're anime guys that wear gas masks.
So, there you go.
That's the Souls crowd, that's the anime crowd, and the weeboos, and that's the cyber goths. They wear their gas masks, don't they?
All tick. So what are we moving on to next, Mr. Coleman?
Right, so I played this one and you didn't.
Oh, right.
This is My Hero One's Justice.
Yes, I wanted to play this.
Yeah.
But the Switches were
they were dead by the time you got to it. So we got there and there was two switches just randomly just on a chair somewhere. It wasn't really any big, you know, it wasn't signs or anything saying go play My Hero One's Justice. And at some point I walked over and saw two switches, and one of them someone was playing and the other one had Dragon Ball FighterZ on it, which wasn't in the lineup advertised to us. And I went, oh, Dragon Ball FighterZ, I have that, and put it down and walked off and played something else. And I didn't realize someone was just messing around and switched on the Dragon Ball demo. So that's why that was there. But My Hero One's Justice. And so, because I then saw someone walk up and go, oh, that's the wrong demo, and put the right one
on. Right. So what type of game was this?
Open Arena Fighter, I guess, is the maybe the correct term.
Okay.
It reminded me, and I'm going to show my age here, it reminded me a lot of Psychic Force.
Right.
That no one has ever played apart from me and a mate from senior school.
Good.
Which was a game on the PlayStation where you played as psychic anime characters and had psi forces. You fought in a big cube because they had arenas, but they wanted to have you open flying around the world, but PlayStation wasn't very powerful.
Okay.
I believe there's a sequel that never came out in the UK. Anyway, it kind of reminded me of that. It's a small open area where you can move around and stuff, and you're not limited to the ground. You can go in the sky and stuff as well, but it was a very small area at the same time. And it was quite upsetting because on the way in, I was looking through the list of games. This one popped up. I looked up a trailer and went, wow, that looks really good. And I showed you and went, that looks, it's very colorful. I hope we can get some footage of that. And unfortunately, we couldn't. But the game itself, after playing it, it kind of reminded me, like, it felt like it's a 3DS game that they stuck on the Switch, to be honest. Not in how it looks, just how it felt. But it had some interesting mechanics. You play these kind of shibby superhero, supervillain characters. They're anime style once again. So they've got spiky hairs or psi powers or gas masks or faces sewn shut or superhero types. And they're all really interesting looking characters. And then you play in like a building area or an open street or something. And depending on the arena, there's different things that happen. So my first fight, I was inside a building, and the more I was kind of button mashing and throwing this person around, the more we would fly into the air and go through floors and break walls apart and stuff along the way. And that part was kind of cool, but it didn't really grip me. And I don't know if it's because every kind of big console game we were playing had a big moveset list and some kind of direction as to what you're doing. This was literally just set up as pick up a switch, work it out. Yeah, it didn't really catch me. I had about 5 fights on this game and I couldn't quite work out what I was doing. So I don't know.
Because it is coming to PS4, Xbox One, and PC, I see, as well, basically.
Yes. Yes, but the only version we had was the handheld Switch version.
Yeah.
But I need to do more research into this and hopefully get my hands on it again. But I wasn't overly impressed with what I played. I don't know when this game's out.
October 26th in English.
Okay, so that's got a fair little while.
August in Japan.
Yeah, that's got enough time. Plus, we don't know when that build was from.
Yes, well, it was from E3.
Was Ace Combat, but that was the build from the previous year. And all that. So. Look it up, the trailer. Well, I might be able to see if I can slip in a snippet of gameplay from the trailer or something in this video, in the video for the podcast, if you are that way inclined. But you can check out a trailer or something yourself. But the excitement of the trailer wasn't conveyed in the game, I felt.
Okay, because I liked the look of it from the trailer. I was disappointed I didn't get a chance to play it.
Psychic Force for the new age. I want Psychic Force too.
Oh,
can I get that?
Possibly never.
I'll see if I can import it.
So, moving on to our final game, I believe?
Yes. So, this is interesting. So, this is a game that's already out. This is a game we have a review for, I believe. Or do we have a review of the first game, not the second one?
Maybe we should double check that.
We should probably double check that. It's a series that we have a review for on the site. This is Divinity Original Sin 2, but this is the enhanced edition for the Xbox One X.
The definitive edition.
Yeah, so you can play it on the Xbox One if you want, but you'll get the full benefit, obviously, from the Xbox One X, improved visuals, 4K, 60 frames a second, all the good stuff you'd expect from a PC on a console. I know about this series. This was a Kickstarter title?
I believe, both games were Kickstarter.
Okay, and this is an RPG in the sense of taking old-school RPG mechanics and trying to bring them to a new age. It's top-down, the very sort of wander around.
Oh, it's isometric rather than top down.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Isometric. I always put the two together. It's very in-depth, but you have to want to play that style of game for it to work, I think. And this is where I think you were getting more enjoyment out of this than I was.
It's still not a game I'd necessarily rush to, but I know Alex will probably like this because it gave me intense Dragon Age vibes. Anyone that listens to the show before, I'm definitely more of a Mass Effect fan than Dragon Age. But yeah, it definitely felt like that sort of universe. Maybe slightly not quite as polished as more recent Dragon Age type things, but like still like a reasonably high graphical standard. But I thought it was more about the different options it gave you and the different options for character building and the kind of the background stories it gave and stuff like that. And just for the record, yeah, it was Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yeah.
Divinity Original Sin 2 that was the one that was reviewed by Pac-Man Polar Bear for the site, and okay. He gave it 5 out of 5, and that's a rare mark for us to give out, basically. So he absolutely loves the game. I know there are lots of other people that are absolutely enamored with it, and I think it's one of those things where if this is your type of game, this is a very good example of that type of game, basically.
Mm.
It's, you know, a very in-depth RPG. As I said, it's got the whole kind of background story element to it. I won't go into it in full because we did actually, I got an interview with one of the developers, so we'll put that at the end of the show, and he kind of really helped dig into that in some more detail. But yeah, I got to play it for a brief time, and believe the capture that we've got, which I think might be going out at the same time, that was Coleman playing, and I played a bit differently, but that was quite handy because we got to see the two like different things and how different things kicked off, and I got into a whole thing where I set a guy on fire that I don't think you even saw because you went out and
no, I saw the guy on fire. Okay, I think I just kind of, so a little peek behind the curtains, if you're doing capture and you know how the modern generation of consoles, they do this handy thing where they put a headphone jack in the controller. Really cool. Really cool thing. Unfortunately, if you're doing capture and you use that, it then mutes the capture.
Don't get the audio.
And that's fine for the podcast. We don't need the audio in the podcast videos, but we've only just started doing that. If you want capture, then you need that audio.
Right, okay, yeah.
And the only other way around that is turn the TV up. But when you're in a room with other people trying to play this game as well, you don't really want to do that. So I was playing this muted while you were playing.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really getting... So,
and that's a shame because it's a whole world-building thing and that kind of, you know, the voice acting.
Yeah, so I don't know how it comes across in the video if it's... But yeah, I tried to play... I was trying to read through and imagine they were talking to the point where I could then skip to the next thing because it doesn't automatically change things. You have to prompt it each time. So I don't know if there's a bunch of people going... Hunter, well done. And we're going through the...
Yeah.
Okay, now let...
Couldn't read
all right, it. But beware for... Yeah, I don't know if it's doing that or not, but it won't really matter in the podcast video. But I will try to put the raw footage up as well, because I haven't got round to doing that yet. Silly me. I forgot.
But I think when we're going to put the interview stuff... Anyway, right. Yeah. But yeah.
But being the definitive edition, it comes with all the content that's been released in DLC and stuff as well. I liked the new characters. There's like a skeleton-type character. I was a little bit upset because you can play these character intros when you're picking your guy.
Yeah.
And if you've got a specific character and class, then it will play like a back, let you know about that person's history and stuff. If you play that same race with a different class, then it may not play that same intro, I found.
It's got a load of like stories in the game and but like background stories that are for particular set characters, but then you can still craft your own character.
Yes.
But one of the things that did explain in the interview that I found quite interesting was basically the system kind of reacts to you dynamically based on the kind of those sort of character traits and you know, background elements to your character that you've built up. So if you're, you know, particularly suave or whatever, you'll get different conversation options and stuff, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it to the interview because he explains it better anyway. But generally, that was something that I found interesting, but I think will also kind of drive interest in this game, not just to play it once, but you could actually play it through multiple times and see just how that actually works out a bit. But
you can go through and not have the same story
yeah.
multiple times over.
And also, you were talking about the skeleton thing. I think you can play an undead version of all the different character races. So you can play like an undead dwarf and stuff like that, basically. So.
Well, what was kind of upsetting and interesting at the same time, because I saw the skeleton thing as like, totally, I'm going for that. And I picked him to watch his intro story. And in my head, he's there going, "Yeah, I'm your He-Man." And I'm thinking he sounds like Skeletor. If you didn't get that from the impression, or if you're young. And instead he's like, "I'm a Skeletor man." And I'm like, oh, that's upsetting. Because I listened back to the footage and went, oh, he didn't sound how I wanted him to sound.
Like,
but then I looked at, if you're playing as that character, he's using magic to hide himself. And apparently it makes the game harder because you're then having to hide your true self from characters in the game. And I went, man, again, critically acclaimed game. Massive score, really high scores across the board.
Super high scores.
Not a game for me. So when I'm saying I'm bored, it doesn't mean this game is bad. It means I want to go play Geralt against Mitsurugi. I was eyeing that up from the corner.
I'm not sure I've got time for this game in my life anymore, but at one time this was the type of game I really liked.
Basically. Oh, yeah.
And
I
entirely understand the appeal, and I think, again, I think
a 13-year-old Coleman would have loved this game, but I just don't have the time. I just started Witcher. I haven't got time for any game now.
Yeah, that's it. You have to give up all other games.
I'm finally playing the third game.
but as I said, I saw a lot to like in the game, not necessarily for me, but definitely for other people, basically. Again, we'll leave that more to the interview, and he'll give more details than I'll able to in better, more eloquent manner.
Okay, and so we're going
to
play that.
Why are you listening to me still?
All right, let's play that interview now. Unfortunately, no skeletal voices will be contained within the interview.
It's me, Tim, and I'm here again with another interview. And if you'd just like to introduce yourself to our audience as well.
Yeah. Hi, Tim. My name's Kieran Kelly. I'm the product manager for Divinity Original Sin 2 at Larian Studios.
Okay. And I believe we've, as kind of saying in the kind of setup to the interview, we've reviewed the first game, I believe, and that was a Kickstarter game. Is that right?
Actually, both Original Sins have been Kickstarters. Okay.
Yeah. And so, it obviously, that worked out well for you the first time. That was something that was worth returning to Kickstarter for the second part as well, basically?
Yeah, so Kickstarter is an interesting topic, actually. We'll probably do a whole podcast on that one. But Kickstarter was a great tool at first to show people... I've been doing a few interviews today, and I've been doing some interviews at E3 and whatnot. And actually, a big topic is... what about this type of RPG on console? Will people like it? Everything else.
Yeah.
I believe they will, and we'll probably get into that. But this was a conversation we had 5 years ago on PC, let alone on console. This is the sort of game that we had to prove that people would play, and publishers weren't necessarily that enthusiastic about it. And that's why you see ourselves and a few others went to Kickstarter, because it became this excellent moment of going, we know there's an audience, we just need to tap into that audience. And we got 20,000 backers for the first one. Just over $1 million, I believe, was raised for Original Sin 1. So when we went back, it wasn't so much... we kind of proven the point that, yes, this type of game can do well and people like it again. But for us, it was making sure that... we believe part of the experience and the success of Original Sin 1 was through community feedback and support. We really valued every single... the pennies, the money obviously was important at the time, but the value from Kickstarter was the feedback we got from players and the involvement that they had and the sense of ownership they had. And so those core fans helped us with Original Sin 1. We wanted to make sure that we could communicate and tap into those fans again. So we went back to Original Sin 2. We were like, we're probably going to do a Kickstarter, and we did.
And I think a fantasy-based RPG in particular sort of lends itself quite well to doing well on Kickstarter as well. No, that seems to be something that ticks the right boxes for the type of people that would back a game on Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, again, because Kickstarter is very fluid in the way it's changing. And I mean, frankly, if you want to make money on Kickstarter, you should probably be releasing a miniatures-based board game.
Yes.
As a board game fan, like, watching that going, I need to make a miniatures-based board game. This is probably some money in it. But yeah, I mean, I think that Kickstarter has allowed a lot of people to go, what's the sort of game I want to play that's not being made right now?
Yeah.
Right? So when the developers that have come forth and gone, this is the sort of game that we want to play and it hasn't been played much, when that resonates with an audience, you're seeing it happen. And I just honestly think it's worked out this way because for whatever reason, over the course of the last 20 years, this has dropped out of favor of lead publishers. And I don't blame them because they're doing what they believe the market dictates. But somewhere along the lines, these RPGs dropped out of the zeitgeist or through the cracks.
Yeah, and I think...
And it's just been a revival, which is great.
Yeah, and I think the only sort of big publisher that's doing a game in of the same ilk type thing as an RPG fantasy-based is obviously Dragon Age. But even that's something they've kind of put on the back burner for the moment while they're concentrating in other markets as well. But there's definitely the demand for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I... without I'm a big fan of a lot of games, so I don't want to. It might come across badly if I start critiquing or talking about specific designs and whatnot. But I think that you could definitely see how there are certain developers dabbling in certain things or engaging with them fully, but doing their own twist on them. But they're either already big enough where they don't need to care about what other people think, or. Right, that's pretty much the main thing that they believe they could do something that resonates with an audience that they have.
Yeah.
And so it's been harder for, say, smaller teams. I mean, when we started, we were about 30 people.
Right.
And we made Original Sin 1. And for a team of that size to convince somebody to give us the money we needed, it was quite tough, obviously.
I've just been reviewing, because they just came out on Switch recently, another success story from Kickstarter, which was the Banner Saga as well. Again, kind of fantasy-based and not quite the same genre, because it's...
The Banner Saga, sorry.
The Banner Saga,
great.
Yeah, really good game as well. And as I said, I think they're particular things that kind of suit, you know, the Kickstarter type of the Kickstarter audience, basically, and the people that are there, basically. But what do you think was sort of key to gaining success on Kickstarter for you, with the sort of the pitch that you kind of took originally to Kickstarter, basically?
What was key? I think it was, we had a very clear idea of what we wanted to make. And I dare I say we knew that idea 3 or 4 years before we went to Kickstarter.
Right.
And the idea of Original Sin 1, excuse me, was called, the original build, I believe, was called Eyes of a Child.
Mm-hmm.
And that pitch went out to several publishers and various people. And I think if I could summarize it in one way, our form of design, and to break new ground, so to speak, to do a multiplayer RPG like we did at the beginning, and to do various things that we knew was popular, say, in the days of Ultima and whatnot, like the interactivity of the world and the multiple ways of solving things, all of that was fairly new turf for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, it required a process that was not driven by milestones as heavily as development usually is. So our whole design philosophy from Original Sin 1 through to the definitive edition of Original Sin 2 has been an iterative process. The dialogue system that you see in this game now is only as good as it was. It's only as good as it is now because of what was nearly a year of iteration of iteration of iteration of style and tone and language that our team of 9 writers had to go through.
Right.
And so their blood, sweat and tears is the reason why the dialogue is so good. And that we can say that about every stretch of the game. Because our iterative process allowed us to go, we don't know how this is going to work. We know it'll feel good when we do it.
Yeah.
But even the controller, for instance, like on the console, while we figured out a lot of it on Original Sin 1 and we were able to basically just improve that for Original Sin 2, a huge amount of that was iterative and figuring out what feels good. And again, it's not something that's done by everybody. So having the flexibility, thanks to Kickstarter, to go, we're not going to stick to milestones. We'll communicate with you guys and be honest with you, as we have done, but we're going to make sure that this is feeling really good before it releases, and secondly, before we let it out, like, you know, tell people about it.
Yeah, and the second game's got critically good reception from you know, on PC last year and stuff, basically. And I think you're saying you're getting 10 out of 10s here and there. And
just the humble brag part here.
Yes.
93 on Metacritic. We won
that's
an award
pretty
from
good.
BAFTA,
yeah.
And we've also got PC Game of the Year from PC Gamer. So we got a 10 out of 10 at GameSpot, which is a very rare thing indeed. So yes, we did very well.
And but then what are the challenges in making sure that you still deliver that full experience to console gamers?
What I can say about this one is Arisen Sim 1 was not originally... Well, we always thought we might bring it to console. It wasn't necessarily in the plans because we didn't have the money. Yeah. We were just like, let's get the game out, see if people like it. Mm-hmm. And then when it came out and everyone liked it, we were like, okay, great. Now maybe we can actually finally do what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because split-screen co-op was in the original document Sim 1. It was literally our two main characters, Scarlett and Roderick, sitting on a couch with two controllers and looking very nonplussed with each other as they were a bit disappointed with their play. And that was from that again was the original vision. So for us, we need to check our time here.
No, just checking it's okay.
No, yeah. When we were bringing this to console, which I believe was your original question, we knew at a launch of Original Sin 2 that console was something we wanted to make.
Yeah, so that was in the back of the mind when you were designing
it. For sure. We never wanted to communicate that with our fans because simply we don't want to disappoint people. We always want to make sure if we're doing it, we commit to it.
Yeah.
And so it was always like, look, we're going to do PC, we'll make sure it happens. Mm-hmm. Because something not a lot of people know, but we don't use Unity or Unreal. We build our own engine from scratch.
Right, okay.
So we have a team, like an absolute troop of programmers who work on our own engine. And so every single time we commit to a port, it's new ground for these guys sometimes.
Right,
so while obviously we learned a lot from Original Sin 1, there was still, you know, we couldn't commit to it until we knew we had the time and resources to put that on. So we always knew we wanted to do it. So that's why we had Original Sin 2's original PC launch had consoles controller support and had split screen in there from the get-go because we knew, firstly, we can learn a lot from doing that on PC.
Right.
There are people that will want to play it on couch. They can do that with their PC version. And then we just make sure that when we use that time then to make sure that we can polish the PlayStation and Xbox versions.
And you mentioned the dialogue system. One of the things I saw from the demo I just got to play through was that there are dialogue branches that are particular to character traits. And then there are dialogue branches that seem to be particular to just the character you're playing as. How does that kind of manifest throughout the game, and how difficult is that to actually build and structure the game around?
So before I get into how difficult is it, how does that define the structure, can I just say that some people don't realize it, but what you're seeing is actually one layer of it.
Right.
There's two layers. Mm-hmm. So when you say that you've got different choices in dialogue, that's how you role play to the world. Okay. So you can say you're a scholar noble.
Yes.
So you get to say something scholarly or nobly.
Yeah.
Nobly. Noble based on this conversation. Or you're Sibyl. And so you have a unique thing that Sibyl would have insight on. Mm-hmm. So these are interesting choices that you can make through the dialogue. Yeah. What you're not seeing is what's happening behind the scenes in the system is that NPC sees those tags and reacts to you differently based on them.
Right, okay, so there is a whole sort of branch.
There's a whole branch there that you might not see because you're a dwarf.
Yes.
Or because you're a scholar. Mm. Or because actually you're an outlaw and they recognize you're an outlaw so they don't talk to you about certain things.
Yeah.
So when you choose tags or you choose an origin story, you're not just saying how you want to role play, but you're saying how you want to be perceived.
Yes.
And so if I showed you a dialogue tree of a regular NPC, you might think that they're a really big story NPC, but actually there's a bunch of branches there that are just there for different redundancies based on your tag system.
Right. Okay.
And so this is why we needed 9 writers. We went from 2 writers to 9 writers in this game. Because there's over 1 million words of dialogue, and I think you'll see maybe 60% of that, depending on how you play and how you work.
But that then adds to the replayability, and you know, obviously makes it more interesting on subsequent playthroughs when you're playing.
Yeah, and
game
it makes
again.
The world feel more dynamic. So if we're playing together in multiplayer, and I'm a dwarf scholar, and you're an outlaw elf, we're going to find ourselves going, actually, you know what? You better chat to them because I think they're part of the Thieves Guild or whatever.
Yeah.
Thieves Guild, but you know what I'm trying to say. They look like they're a dodgy side of the life there, so maybe you should chat to them. You can maybe speak a little streetwise and have a different conversation. And so that dynamic is throughout the entire game.
Okay.
And so by doing that, we create the goal of that, right? Why are we doing that?
Mm.
The goal of that is to create a more immersive world.
Yeah.
So when I play that game and I play it the way I want to play it, the game reacts to it and it isn't a generic reaction. It feels unique to my character.
Mm.
And whether I'm playing a custom-made character or a pre-written character.
Yeah, and so does that mean that there are presets, like obviously, like there's the background stories for the kind of pre-made characters.
Yeah.
And I was playing as the Red Prince with Big Red Barrel, so I was kind of on brand there, basically. And he was kind of noble and scholarly, so they had those certain things. But does that mean if you make a character, there could be structures where having like particular traits lead to a sort of an odd kind of set of you know, structure and root?
Well,
in the
I
game,
mean,
basically.
Yeah, if you're going to play something like a jester noble, that might find you might find yourself having some interesting conversations. but no, like the system is robust enough to allow you to role play the character you want to role play.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Where the origins come in, the origin stories are pre-written mm-hmm. characters. They have their own unique tags.
Yeah.
So that's how we deal with if somebody knows the Red Prince mm-hmm. or if the Red Prince would have certain insight in a certain yeah. situation. Excuse me. And what's great about... So the reason why... I actually got this in the previous interview. Mm. If we were to say... we found out that our audience actually... A good chunk of our audience wanted custom characters. They wanted to make sure they yeah. could roleplay themselves or yeah. somebody else they wanted to create. But then we had a bunch of people saying, actually, no, I kind of prefer a pre-written character with their own lore and history in the world. So the reason why the tag system, or part of the reason why the tag system became what it was to allow these two things to happen. Mm. So by creating a tag system that allowed you to customize your character, not just visually or I get to write a bio,
yeah.
but to actually say to the game, these are fundamentally parts of what defines
right,
me as
yeah.
a person and a character. The game can then react back, and that's the whole point of it.
And I noticed you could have undead versions of those characters
yes.
as well, basically. So you can be an undead dwarf that's scholarly and
yep.
noble and
absolutely.
Everything else like that.
Undead is fun because the way it works on a very basic level is that you have to cover yourself. So you have to wear
right.
particular parts of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you remove one of those, so let's say you take off your hood or take off your trousers for whatever reason, and start walking around with part of your skeletal body exposed,
yep.
then people will react to you as if you're an undead.
Okay.
So they will see you as an undead and they'll either retreat in fear or they'll attack you or maybe they'll even talk to you because they're
right.
not actually put off by the undead. and so how that works is then you basically you switch tags when you do that.
Right.
So
yep.
you are a dwarf undead. So
mm-hmm.
when you are fully clothed, the world sees you as a dwarf and your tag
right.
is dwarf. But when you take off your hood, you're now an undead
now
and
an
people
undead
react.
And people
and in the same way, we have a mechanic in the game called a shape-shifting mask that you can craft or find in the world. And that allows you to put on a mask that changes your race.
Okay.
So if you wanted to say you're playing as a human and you decide, actually, I'm about to encounter a bunch of elves, it would be ideal to speak to them as an elf, and I don't have
right.
an elf in my party.
Yeah.
I can put on the shape-shifting mask, switch to an elf form,
okay.
and then... don't ask me how you craft a shapeshifter.
Okay, we'll leave that one to be discovered in the game, basically. But I was a Red Prince, and during the kind of tutorial and opening part of the game, I was wandering around with a bucket on my head because it gave me a bit more defense and made me look silly. I kind of liked that. That seemed to.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can literally play the game any way you want, basically.
Yeah. Well, there's an old philosophy. We've moved offices since, but in the old office in Ghent, in Belgium. We had a little sign on the wall and it said, "Why can the plant pot be moved? Because it's there." And
right.
the philosophy, at least for us, is again, we want the world to be as immersive possible. And so, if there is something there, we want logic there.
Yeah.
And so there's David, our producer, who's very much into our loot tables and our items in the game, will probably tell me that I'm wrong, but I believe that absolutely every single item in the game has a use somewhere.
Right, okay.
And we've tried to make sure that that's the case with everything. So if it's an item or a person
yeah.
or a skill, it has multiple uses as much as possible.
And there's a whole crafting system, and you can be combining
yeah.
objects to make new things and other stuff as well, basically.
Yeah, crafting's a funny one because a lot of people maybe don't like it, but then the people that do really want it. So we've always made sure that our game has crafting because there's quite a few of us in the team that are very passionate about it.
Okay. And so what's new for the second game particularly that you've added from the previous game?
So the improved version of the Definitive Edition?
Well, I was going to come on to the Definitive Edition.
Sure, okay.
And
so
see
Original
what,
Sin 1 to Original Sin 2,
yeah, yeah.
you're going to see huge changes. Firstly, you've got the multiple races. It was only human before.
Right.
Huge amount of dialogue, four-player, multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
A huge amount of additional dialogue. all fully voice acted from the get-go. The original Sim 1 wasn't at the beginning, and then it was for translation. Right. Split screen multiplayer. If you're playing on PC, there's arena and game master mode. If there's if you're playing on console, there's arena mode as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of new features, I mean, the biggest one that we would have pitched in Kickstarter, I believe, would be the tag system. The tag system has allowed a huge amount of extra role play involved. We've rehashed an awful lot of the combat and the encounters that you play. All our encounters are still handcrafted, so there's nothing randomly generated. Okay. So every single experience has been designed by a designer to make it challenging but fun.
Yeah.
And then we've added some new mechanics for combat. So there's height mechanics in there now. You can now bless and curse surfaces. So not sure if you know much about the combat in the game, but it's all elemental gameplay. So
yeah, I got an example. My first fight, in the tutorial, I found the guard. I sort of persuaded him to go upstairs. I then opened the prisoner, released the prisoner, got into a fight with him, set him on fire because we were standing around a kind of oil patch, basically.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Of it resolves to fire. Absolutely.
But I was a battle mage as well, so I had fire available to me as well, basically. So
I mean, with that fire, you can make it rain, douse the flames, which would turn it into steam, and then I can electrify that steam cloud, so if you walk through it, you get stunned. I can do various things with the elemental interaction, and all of it is very intuitive.
Yeah.
In the same way, we just basically added to that, so now you can now curse and bless surfaces using source powers. So if you're burning in flame, you could actually bless the flame, turn it into a restorative fire, it turns blue, it starts healing you all the time.
Nice.
So there's multiple different things we've added there. We've added two brand new skill trees. It's not a tree, but a skill school. So there's now polymorph for literally changing your body and the enemies. And then there is a conjurer, which is a summoning skill tree, essentially. Okay. So a skill school. So you're able to summon totems, which depending on the surface they're summoned on.
Right.
Fire totem, oil totem. Mm-hmm. You can imagine what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
And then you also get you get a minion who you can summon on various surfaces who will also get different abilities. Cool. So we've added a lot to Original Sin 2.
And we mentioned the definitive version as well. Is that the console release or is that coming to PC as
That's coming
I'm
to PC as well. Yep. And that'll be free to anybody who owns Original Sin 2. They'll get the definitive edition for free on PC. So what's coming to definitive edition, we've changed a huge chunk of the story for Act 3. So the final part of the game has been rewritten, rescripted. A lot of new a lot of new actual encounters and bits and pieces in there. Quite a few new combats. There are some significant changes to how the story will conclude to try and make it better. We were noticing, the story concluded. It wasn't like it just ended abruptly. Because of the nature of the way we design our games, we have to rely on dialogue and various discoveries of the player to make sure that you discover parts of the... Like, we don't rely on cutscenes, for instance.
Right, yeah.
So the end of the game required us to actually communicate a little bit better about some of the way your choices in Act 1 and Act 2 actually came to conclusion. Yeah. So we just want to make sure that you get the most fulfilling ending as possible. So we've reworked a lot of that. Over 100,000 words have been re-recorded for that.
Okay.
We've changed the journal, and the journal has been completely rewritten and redone. We've completely changed how we do the journal now. And we've also changed quite a few UI elements to make it both good for console and PC.
Okay.
So they're just the broad strokes, but there's obviously quite a bit.
Yeah. And what's your plans? You may not be able to talk about this fully at the moment, but kind of dancing around a little bit. What's your plans for the future in terms of this genre this series or beyond this series as well? You mentioned miniatures and being a fan of that. Would you like to see a board game in this universe, possibly?
Would I like to see a board game? I think there's quite a few board game fans in the company, and a Divinity board game would be cool. Whether that happens or not, I'm not privy to that specific piece of information. In terms of the future, there's a couple of projects in the pipeline, and we've definitely got some cool stuff coming up, but that's all I can say.
Watch this space sort of thing. Exactly. Just if it comes to it, we do a board game event in a video game themed bar, so if it comes down to
you'll
it,
have then, to give me your information.
Exactly, we'll have to go from there
if that ever happens.
But yeah, also just where can people, where and when can people get hold of Divinity 2 Original Sin as well, basically?
Perfect. So if you want any more information, you can go to divinity.game, and the game comes out on August 31st on PC, Xbox One, and PS4, and there is actually HDR support for both, so we're going to be using the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pros extra features.
Cool.
Thank you, Past Tim, for that there interview that you did very well. I hear you're the most talkative interviewer of the entire show.
Also, I was told, Coleman. Also, I was told. But yeah, it, as I said, seemed like a good, interesting game, and seemed like an interesting interview. I got more time for any man that likes his board games as well, so that carried some favour. Bit disappointed I didn't see Ace Combat. Would have liked to see that again, but it was a nice selection of games we got to see. And yeah, thank you very much for Namco Bandai for inviting us along and having us down to play some games. What was your pick of the bunch, Mr. Coleman?
Oh, I was going to ask you that. It's probably going in, it was Jump Force. Coming out, it was Soul Calibur 6.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I think going in, it was Soul Calibur 6, and coming out, it was Soul Calibur 6. So, yeah.
We haven't got enough fighting games.
No, we need more fighting games.
Do you know what? I was working this out the other day, because we were talking about playing different fighting games and stuff, and I've been picking up a lot of fighting games on the PS4, and then I went, hold on, why don't I plug in the 360? Why don't I plug in the PS3? Why don't I plug in... Like, we've got different consoles.
Yeah,
we have a lot of fighting games to get through. So I could start buying Neo Geo fighting games on the PS4 instead.
Now we just need a couple of arcade sticks, Coleman.
Yes, got to get some arcade sticks in. We're going to do this properly. It's going to be great. Evo's coming up in August. Oh. I'm actually excited.
Yeah. Got some games to watch.
But yeah, thanks to Bandai Namco for inviting us. It was an awesome time.
But yeah. And if you want to check out the video footage as well, Mr. Coleman did some good job of doing the capturing, getting that up. Soul Calibur and Code Vein is up. And I believe we have plans to put a few other bits possibly as
and
well.
If you are watching the Soul Calibur footage, Tim is the one on the right, spamming.
I'm the spammer.
I'm on the one left, learning. Biding my time. That is a video of two halves. I get my ass kicked for half a video, and then I turn it around for at least three matches.
Some matches.
I won three or four. I was okay at the end. That's one of those instances, because I think it was when we played Tekken 7 like 3 years ago in preview. And I realized that you are the Rain Man of fighting games, because if it's a series you've played before and you haven't played it in a long time, you go, you'll get your ass kicked for half a match and then go, I suddenly remember everything.
Yeah. Muscle memory kicks in. Bang.
Insane. It's fun to watch, but insanely infuriating, because I don't have that. I have ruined my brain cells over the years. Anyway, but yes, this was a short episode. Well, short for us, because, you know, we're not going the full hour and or 2 hours that we tend to record. And this is a nice little short thing. For you, it's a big thing, because we put in an interview as well. And for me, it's a big thing, because I've got to edit the whole thing as well.
But thank you, Coleman.
You're welcome.
Someone else chiming in saying thank you.
So, yes, we will be back for episode 301, normal on the Friday that will be released. Dan will be back unless something happens, like his new house explodes or something. We both went to the same vein, different scenario.
There's always got to be comedy things going around. I just imagine, have you ever seen the movie with Richard Pryor, Moving, I think it's called?
No,
it's just literally everything that can go wrong in the move went wrong, and it sounds like Dan with his new house.
See?
I'm just imagining him like he gets all the keys, everything signed over, and he's just standing in the door as everything collapses.
An old school thing as well. Like, even before that, the whole the facade house falling down. But yeah, I was thinking
that's
Money
how
Pit.
Imagining Dan in a black and white. I'm
thinking Money Pit, but instead of Tom Hanks, it's Dan with 5 o'clock shadow wearing a dressing gown, scream laughing at a hole in the floor. You know, I think that works. Anyway, yes, we'll be back for episode 301. all stations back to normal. We'll go back to news headlines, what we done played, all that stuff. We just wanted to we needed to clear some backlog on our agenda that's been running for about 2 weeks.
Yes. So we decided we're going to have a review heavy episode. Let's get all the Namco stuff in one crazy good little package for you.
Yes. So, for this bonus episode of the Bigger About UK podcast, I have been Coleman.
I might have been Tim.
And until next time, dear listeners, a goodbye.
You and your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.